My name is Foyvance.
So we've got some Northern Ireland, we've got some Oklahoma, we've got some down south, we've got some back to Ireland. But what is a couple of simple things between the lines that in the millions of times that, you know, since that first album back in, you know, your soul and funk days, oh, you know, we're going to go way back.
Right.
But what is a couple of things you want people to know that's going to inform them?
Do you know what? Don't you think the beauty of music is figuring stuff out for yourself?
There you go.
I do anyway, you know.
There you go.
I like that people find their own little treasures, their own little nuggets.
So then that's the great between the lines is you don't want them to go with the normal lines. You want them to do exactly what we're gonna launch into. So let's talk about, I mean, we've all seen The Commitments. We all know about the guy knocking on the door and Jimmy answers the door and he's put the want ad in the paper and all of that. But Northern Ireland is different. Uh-huh. Northern Ireland's been through, so soul and funk from Northern Ireland versus what we all know from them Dublin bands.
Uh-huh.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, you know, I think soul is very much alive in Northern Ireland.
Right, because there's Northern alive. Soul, but Northern Soul is kind of a UK picking old Motown and Stax obscurities. We're talking different here.
That's
right?
A very different thing. Northern
exactly.
Soul is a very different thing.
Exactly.
What I'm talking about, when I say about soul in Northern Ireland, I mean, I think Van is your starting point. Yeah, you know, so he introduced a lot to Northern Irish musicians and artists.
I don't even know if people listen to Van Morrison and ever even, because it's so far down the track, I don't know if they even would think Northern Ireland when they listen to Van Morrison these days.
Yeah, I mean, I guess coming from home, it's, you know, everyone that I know does, but yeah, I guess outside of Northern Ireland, maybe they don't make that association. I mean, it's not really important where he comes from, is it? It's only important to me because I grew up in that area, and he was the visionary that kind of made stuff happen.
2007 was technically the first record, but there was also an EP on Communion in there.
Mm-hmm.
And Communion is, to most of America, it's a very new thing. But it's an interesting time right now. One of the quotes that I love that you said was, you know, people say, well, why? 2007, 2013, why so long? And the quote that I love, and I think about this in what I'm doing in my life and how I've made some changes recently, is that you didn't have the right team until now.
Mm.
So tell me about that.
Yeah, the team that I had about me when I released the first record, Hope, although their intentions were good, you know, and I was surrounded by a lot of nice people, you know, very personable people. They weren't the guys that could kind of get the record out there properly, you know, and it sort of felt, I don't know, it felt like a very sort of unnatural release.
Well, and that, you know, so this is an interesting thing, because again, I'm gonna pull another quote before we go over to Glassnote, but you know, you've said that you feel like this record is like releasing your first record.
I think what happened with that first record was that I set up my own label with my managers, which is not always a great move, you know, historically and in my own case. And I think it sort of involved me in things that weren't important to me. You know, I had a good team around me. They were good people, but we were trying to do it in a way that just, we were incapable of doing what we wanted to do. You know, and setting up my own label kind of involved me in things that were of absolutely no interest to me.
But what you are good at is you talk about not thinking too much about the craft and using your gut.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to implement craft. You've got to implement craft at some stage. But I think essentially when songs come, you've got to get out of the way as much as you possibly can. You know, unless it comes from a subconscious place without putting too fine a point on it. I'm just not really that interested in it, you know.
Glassnote, who found who?
Well, you know what? Glassnote are they're a label that I have been interested in for a while. And, you know, we went to see them a good while back. And the second I met Daniel and I sat down face to face with Daniel...
He's a real guy.
I just fell in love. You know, I fell in love. I just thought, this guy, even if he doesn't sign me, if he doesn't sign me, it will be for the right reasons. You know, it'll be, even if he does like it and he doesn't sign it, it'll be for the right reasons. You know, he's the kind of man that demands respect. You know, he knows what he's doing and he does it with the right heart. And I fell in love with that instantly. I just thought, wow, this is the kind of label I'd love to be part of. You know, the fact that they came along and signed me then shortly after that was just a blessing.
One of the things that's interesting about this record is, and there's a wonderful documentary that I took the time to watch on the Glassnote site of kind of the process.
Yeah.
And it looks like a lot of work. a lot of work, which is what it really takes. And really the vocals were the key. And then there was a lot of tinkering and thinking along the way about bringing in the players and what fleshed this all out.
Well, I started working with the producer for this record, Michael Keeney.
Right. Who's got quite the reputation.
Yeah, you know, he's a...
And then some.
He's a great producer. I mean, I think the thing with Michael is that he's a friend of mine, and interestingly, he didn't really come up when I was looking at people to produce this record. I knew I wanted a producer. I knew I didn't want to produce it myself. I knew I wanted to focus just on the delivery of the performances and to sort of allow the sonic identity of the whole record to fall into the hands of someone else. I mean, I would never have let it be something I didn't want. You know, it was very important to find the right connection. And I worked with various producers. I did like a day or two in studios in New York and throughout the States and in England with various people. And just nothing really felt right. There were people did some really good jobs on some of the songs that I had, but it just didn't click with me, you know. And whereas with Keeney, Michael Keeney, we went into the studio out in Donegal, a place just outside a town called Kilmacrenan in Donegal. We went in there for 2 days and we recorded 3 songs live. We learnt them and recorded them in these 2 days. And all 3 of those songs could have been on the record. The only reason why 2 of them aren't is because they didn't fit in the arc of the album. But so it was very natural. It was I didn't have to explain too much to him, and he didn't have to do that with me either. You know, it was a natural relationship.
I love the way that you approached it in saying, "Wait a minute, I'm actually asking, you know, a multiple Grammy winner, and very humbling, to appear on my record."
Mm-hmm.
But knowing Bonnie, she probably just looked and said, "Hey, boy, it's a great song. Of course I'll do it."
I think when I had sort of explained that it was actually, I just wanted her to do backing vocals, she was she was relieved a little bit.
It was good.
You know what? I was a little bit embarrassed because, you know, she's a 10-time Grammy Award-winning legend. She's a legend, that woman, in every respect.
But she's so totally accessible.
Oh, she's completely down to
earth.
She's
one of the most accessible... of the bigger artists that I know. Yeah. She's so accessible.
Yeah, she's very real, is Bonnie. Very, very real.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich.
Okay.
It's 2 of your songs as the bread, and then songs by anybody else you want to play in between, and I play 40 minutes of solid music.